To our 3 It Isn't 30 Minutes. First of all, I want to thank our sponsor for this evening, sponsored by Dr. Michael Eliff, in honor of Moshe Kamenetsky supplying the Gashmias, and to Rabbi Moskowitz for supplying the Ruchnias. Thank you very much, Dr. Eliff. And if anyone wants to sponsor a future 3 It Isn't 30 Minutes, you can speak to me or Judy or anyone else in the shul, and we will happily take your donation. Okay, here we go. Idea number one comes from someone who I admire a lot and I love his Torah, Rabbi Alex Israel. He wrote something which I thought was phenomenal. He writes here the following. In 2018, the UK Office of National Statistics showed that 53% of young people have no savings at all. One reason they explained was that amongst the participants in the poll, there was a general agreement that young people should be spending their money on enjoying themselves while they are still young. This meant that they prioritized spending now over saving for the future. Now, parenthetically, that is bad financial advice, and do not listen to them. Okay, says Rabbi Israel, should we be living for now or for the long term? He writes, this is at the epicenter of the story between Esav and Yaakov. Esav, of course, comes home. He's famished. He's hungry. Yaakov says, sell me the birthright. And Esav said, well, if I'm going to die of hunger, what's the purpose of the birthright anyways? And so he makes a switch. And if you look at the pasuk, it says he ate, he drank, he rose, and he left. And Esav, vayivez Esav esa bechora, Esav spurned the birthright. So ask Rabbi Israel a few questions. Number one is, why did Yaakov want the birthright so badly? And number two is, why does he spurned it? Didn't he value the birthright? He writes here the following. Commentaries point to the fact that Esav acts as he ate, he drank, he rose, he left, seeing the essence of this scene as a clash between two sensibilities, two mindsets, exemplifying the difference between Yaakov and Esav. And I want to read you the Hebrew, and then we'll translate the English, because I think it is such an amazing idea from the Ramban. The Ramban writes, "Ki ein chefetz b'ksilim, a fool only wants, rak sheyochlu v'yishtu v'yasu chefzam b'itam, a fool only indulges for the pleasures of the here and now. V'lo yachushu liyom machar. And a fool does not think about the consequences. They have no concern for the future whatsoever. Azoy zakt, that is the Ramban. Dayenu to come for that Ramban. The Ramban says that a fool only thinks about the here and now. It is only someone who's wise. That's why the Chazal tell us, is haroa es hanolad. Someone who sees the consequences in the future of their actions. He writes, the Ramban explains that Esav spurned the birthright because it was only a value in the distant future, after his father's death. Esav valued only the present, only what he could eat and enjoy in the moment. In contrast, Yaakov was very much concerned with the future leadership of the family, with the divine covenantal promises. These would be realized many generations later, and yet that was primary on his mind. So whereas Esav had a mindset of what is good for me here and now, Yaakov was thinking about the future, and even if it meant to sacrifice for here and now, it meant to benefit from the future. And therefore, said the Ramban, "Ki ein chevetz b'ksilim, a fool only thinks about their belly today, v'le'yochoshu li'omachar. They do not think about the future." He goes on to say, in truth, fine. When we see a friend throwing away their future for the present, we realize they have got it wrong. When we see people who have seemed to have no sense of future beyond themselves, they clash with the Jewish value system. Of course, what makes Judaism unique is that we don't just live for the here and now. We don't just live for the pleasures of this moment. Chazal already tell us that when you have a choice sometimes, you have a mechashev schar mitzvah kenedev seda, vehefsed avera keneged schara. You have to think about, what am I going to gain by doing this right now versus what am I going to lose in Olam Haba versus what am I going to lose right now by doing it versus what I'm going to gain in the future. So for example, if you do something you're not supposed to do, you eat something you're not supposed to do, you look at something you're not supposed to do, you say something, it might feel really good in the present. It might make you feel really good now. But you know what you're sacrificing? You're sacrificing Olam Haba. You're sacrificing a future. By the way, this doesn't just apply to our relationship with Hashem. This applies in relationships all the time. Sometimes you get very mad at someone. You get mad at a spouse, a child. And what do? You lash out. You react. You respond a certain way, sometimes particularly in a harsh fashion. Now, that might make you feel good. You might have gotten that zinger in. You might make yourself feel better, but you know what you've done? You've destroyed a relationship. You've destroyed trust within the relationship. And it's going to take you years and years and years to repair that. So you might have made yourself feel really good right now by giving that insult or by zinging that sarcastic, snide comment. But you've destroyed something that's going to take a lot longer. And so therefore, says the Ramban, we have to think not just about our current actions, but how our current actions impact ourselves in the future as well. Chevra, this applies to our eating habits. This applies to what I eat today is going to impact me in the future. There are consequences to my actions. It applies to my spiritual growth, that the decisions I make today, even if I have to make sacrifice, I sacrifice pleasure right now, but by sacrificing pleasure right now, I'm investing in something in the future. We do that every time. We pay for Jewish education. It's a massive sacrifice on us. It's really hard, but you know why we're doing it? Because we're playing the long game. We don't just believe in living in the here and now. Rather, we believe in setting the stage for something in the future. You can read the rest on your own, but he writes at the end, he said, today we have found different ways of meaning, form identities, and relate to transcendence. In this context, he said, or he was talking about people who chose not to have children. That is the question. Are we seeking something meaningful beyond satisfying our desires here and now? Yaakov is looking for a transcendent value system. Yaakov was willing to play the long game. He understood that there's an arch to Jewish history, that there's a long game to Jewish history. And even if it meant sacrificing some food right now, it was worth it because you would get something in the future. That is our Abrahamic legacy. Esav was totally absorbed by his own needs, by the call of the moment. And I believe fundamentally, this is the challenge that all of us face all the time, is we get caught in a situation, we have to make a decision. Am I going to live and make my decisions for now, or am I going to make sacrifices now, but that are going to pay off in the future? So he started off financially. We all know that to be true. If you want to succeed financially, what do you have to do sometimes? You have to save. Now, saving might mean you have to cut back a little bit here and now. It might mean you're not going to have as much for your vacation now. But you know that if you don't put away a little bit every month, you're never going to retire. And so you sacrifice now for the future. We do an exercise. I happen to be a wacko, and I like exercise. But I recognize, Rabbi Goldberg and I have this debate oftentimes, not everyone loves exercise. But why do you exercise? You exercise because your doctor tells you that if you don't exercise today, what's going to happen in the future? Your blood pressure is going to be high. Your cholesterol is going to be high, right? So you do stuff now that may or may not be so pleasant. You might sacrifice some immediate pleasure right now. It might be better to drink and to eat and to sit on the couch. You're willing to exercise now because it's investment in the future. Says the Ramban, in the words of Rabbi Israel, that is the debate of Yaakov and Esav. At its core, Esav was saying that, what do I care about the future? What do I care what I look like in my 80s? What do I look like? What do I care with my diet? What do I care about what do I care about any of that? Right now, I want the steak, I want the alcohol, whatever, so I'm going to live here and now. Yaakov comes along and says, no, we can't just live here and now. We have to think about the consequence of our future actions. I used this story a few years ago. It is literally to this day, I want you to know, it has transformed my life. Now, I don't use that as a hyperbole. I mean it. This story changed my life. I'm sharing with you, and for every rabbi listening to this, it's going to use it in their drasha, the Shabbos, with permission. Okay, here we go. Rabbi Beryl Wines, Zecher Tzadik B'Kadosh L'Varcha, tells the following story. He was once traveling, if you guys, I used this on Pesach maybe 3 years ago. He was traveling for an Israel Bonds event. He was speaking, and he showed up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and a woman from Israel Bonds was going to pick him up and take him to his hotel. Okay, she greets him at the airport. I've always wanted that, like someone with a sign greeting me at the airport. You know, welcome, Philip Moskowitz. Okay, maybe one day I'll be Zeicha. But she greets him at the airport, and she says, okay, we'll just walk to my car. So they walk across the road, you know, and you try not to get hit by the cars coming, the Ubers, whatever. And they get to the parking lot, and they're looking. She can't find a car anyway. She goes, I understand. It's a white Honda Civic. It's got to be here somewhere. And they're looking. They're walking around for like 45 minutes, an hour. She can't find a car anyways. It's embarrassing. So she says to Rabbi Wine, I'll put you in a taxi. You go to the hotel and I'll stay back. I'm going to look for my car. So Rabbi Wine says, before I put you put me in a taxi, let's just go ask. Show me your ticket. So she gives him the ticket. He goes over to an attendant. He says, you know, we're really struggling to find the parking spot. Can you maybe help identify where the car is based on the ticket? So the attendant looks at the ticket. He gives a laugh. And he says, I'm so sorry to tell you, you guys have been looking this whole time in short-term parking, but really you're parked in long-term parking. Sure enough, they go to long-term parking, there's the white Honda Civic, and they drive. As they're on the way to the airport, the woman looks at Rabbi Wine and she says, you know, you're a rabbi. You rabbis find lessons in every life experience. What lesson could you possibly find from our experience today? Rabbi Wein looked at her and said that what we experienced today was the mistake of modern man. He says, modern man always looks for happiness and fulfillment in short-term parking. But the truth is, that's not where you find it. You find it in long-term parking, right? We are always looking for solutions and happiness and purpose and fulfillment in short-term parking. We want immediate results. We want to live here and now. We want to enjoy the pleasures, and we don't want to sacrifice for it. But you know what? Sometimes in Judaism, you got to play the long game. Sometimes you do things, even if they're hard, and even if they don't make sense, and even if it's like exercise where it's vicious to you, but you got to play the long game, because the foundation of Judaism is not found in short-term parking. It is found in long-term parking. That is a story. If I told you how many ways that has changed my life, but that's for when the recording is off for another time in perhaps a few l'chaims. Okay, that is idea number one of Rabbi Alex Israel. I think just a beautiful understanding of the beginning of Parsha. Idea number two comes from Reb Moshe Feinstein. And Reb Moshe Feinstein on the same exact story. Pasuk says, Hinei anochi holech lamus v'lama ze li b'chora. As we just said, Esau says, I'm going to die. What's the point of the b'chor? And Rashi over there quotes, Rashi says that Vayivez, that he disgraced the b'chor. That the b'chor was this, elevated honor. And Esau traded it for a pot of chulent. He traded it for some Moshe Kamenetsky's chulent. So how is, if you're going to do that, it's not so bad. Right. So ask Ramosha. He says, I understand. Now, if you looked at the Rashi there, what does Rashi say? How is he Vayivez? He says, I don't know the exact language, but if you want to pull it up, I'll read it. He says, what was Esav's issue with the Bechor? He says, there's so many responsibilities. There's so many Azharos. There's so many things to think about. He says, Amar lo, kama Azharos, ve'anashim, amisos tulimba. You know, this Judaism, it's really hard. And there's a lot of pressure on Judaism, because if you don't get it right, well, there's a lot of punishments that are waiting for you on the other end. So what do I need this headache for? It's much easier to live without the Judaism, without all the pressure, without all the responsibilities. What do I need the pressure for? Ask Reb Moshe Feinstein, how is that Vayivez? How is that disgracing the Bechor? I got to be honest, I'm not going to poll everyone here. My guess is that there's a piece of all of you in this room that agree with Esav. There's a piece of every single one of us that might say every now and then, what do I need this headache for? The heaviness of Yom Kippur, of Rosh Hashanah, the heaviness, right? All the Jewish guilt that's loaded on us for generations. You know what would be a lot easier? If I just live my life and I have to worry about schar v'onesh, I don't have to worry about reward. Don't nod your head so, strongly, right? What do I need this headache for? That's not disgracing the Bechor. That's like a very natural reaction to a lot of pressure from Judaism. So that's where Moshe Feinstein says. He said, L'chaora tamua. Ma shenechshav zeh l'bizayna b'chora. Why is that a bizayon? It's not a bizayon. That's understandable. Judaism is hard, and sometimes it's heavy. And sometimes the thought of the schar of onesh is also heavy. Kevan shemerov chashivusa hira yarei l'kabbalah. Esav wasn't disgracing the b'chor. It actually, if you think about it, he showed reverence for it. He understood how significant and serious Judaism was. And he's just like, I don't think I can handle that. I can't handle the pressure of having to do 613 mitzvos, and then all the rabbanans, and then all the minhagim, and then all the things that the rabbis tell me I have to do that I never learned in, yeshiva. And then, I don't know if I could do all that. Sometimes it's just easier to live my life. That's where Moshe Feinstein's kasha. It's a gavaldik kasha. I think it's a kasha, it's a question that is very emotionally intuitive to how many people feel. Listen to Ramosha's answer. It is so powerful. He says, "V'nira shehu mishum she'adam tzarich lekabel alav lasos lechavot shamayim af sheish baze achrayis kveda." We cannot run away from responsibility. Does being Jewish and living a halachic lifestyle carry with it responsibility? Absolutely, says Ramosha. But we can't run away from it. We can't shy away from that. Does wearing a yarmulke and being on an airplane, and that means that you have to behave a certain way, and when the waiter or the waitress treats you a certain way, it means sometimes you have to be nice, even though you want to scream at them, but you understand that you're wearing a yarmulke and you have the kosher meal, and therefore it's a Kiddush Hashem or Chilul Hashem, depending on how you behave. Is that a responsibility? Of course a responsibility. But says Rav Moshe Feinstein, we cannot run away from that responsibility. We can't shirk from the responsibility. Just because it is hard doesn't mean we shouldn't be doing it. He says, "V'af shi'yeh alav kama irurim al yedei zeh," even though it's going to be difficult, and even though it's going to be hard, "v'im eino osa kein hu bichlal bizayon." What a strong comment. He says, if you run away from the responsibility of Judaism, that is a bizayon. You are disgracing Judaism. If you run away from the responsibilities of what it means to be an Orthodox Jew, it is a bizayon. It means you don't care about it. It means you don't value it. It means it's not important enough to you that you're willing to put in the sweat equity to make it happen. And that's the powerful language of Rav Moshe Feinstein. So was Esau vayives es habechora? How was he desecrating it? He just didn't want the responsibility. He didn't want the burden. The answer is no. That we can't run away from that burden. And if we do run away from the burden, the responsibilities of what it means to be a religious Jew, that's a bizayon, because it means you don't care about it enough. It means you don't value it enough. It means you don't love it enough to the extent that you're willing to put all of your chips on the table and say, I'm going on it, all in on it. And if you're not willing to do that, then it's vayives. He says, "Dekadai hu kavod shamayim mitzvos Hashem sheyikabal alasos af sheyish bazeh kama inyanei achrayus." Even if it means that I have to take responsibility, I got to do it. "Delo kahar be'anashim shein rotzin lekabal rabbanus." Not rabbanus in the sense you have to be a pulpit rabbi. Rabbanus in the sense like leadership. You know what? Leadership's hard. Leadership's challenging. Leadership's not always pleasant. Being on boards isn't pleasant, and being on committees isn't pleasant, and putting your investment in a school or in a shul is not easy. But you know what? Says Rav Moshe, you have to do it. You have to do it. And if you don't do it, it means you don't really care. It means you don't really care. That's the bizayon. So how is vayives as a bechora? How is he bizayon it? He just says, I don't want the responsibility of it. The answer is that if you're not willing to take responsibility for something, it means you don't really care about it. That means that you are mevazet. That means that you are desecrating something. Now, the reason why I love this idea so much is because what it does is it takes a negative and makes it a positive. It takes what we would perceive as a challenge and it turns it into a responsibility. Yes, you around this table are the, let's call it the 3%, probably even higher, but the 3% of Judaism in the world. We've spoken about this in the past. If you are sitting at this table on a Thursday night and you are here learning Torah, you're in the top 3% of Jews in the world, which means that you are above 97% of the Jews in the world. Now, 7% of them, statistically, again, according to Pew Research, knows that they're Jewish. They show up for the Yom Nerayim. 90% don't know anything. They don't even know what Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah, or the upcoming holiday of Hanukkah is. That means, chever, that we have a responsibility. It means that when we wear a yarmulke out, that we bear responsibility. It means that the way we conduct ourselves, the way we speak, the way we act, the way we interact with other people, it means we are being judged based on that. Someone is going to judge Judaism based on how you say good morning to them, based on how you give feedback to them. Maybe sometimes you have to have a hard conversation with them, and maybe the way you do that shows your menschlichkeit as well. Is that an awesome responsibility? Yes, it's an awesome responsibility. Is it annoying sometimes? Of course it's annoying sometimes. Would I rather sometimes just say, you know what? What's the famous line from, we're the chosen people. You know, God, can you choose someone else? What was that from? A Fiddler on the Roof? Tevye? There's a line from there where he says, you know, he looks up at God and he says, you know, can you for once choose another people? Something like that, right? Sometimes you say, okay, let someone else be the chosen people. I just want to live my life. I want to go to the supermarket, not worried about how I'm going to be judged. I want to get on an airplane and be able to scream at a stewardess and not have to worry about a Chil Hashem. I want to go to my waiter or my waitress when they ruin my meal and tell them what I really think. But you know what? I can't do that because I wear a yarmulke. Living a life of the top 3% means that we have a responsibility. It says Rav Moshe, we cannot run away from that responsibility. We have to run towards it. We have to run towards it. We have to realize the privilege that it is to be a religious Jew. That's the vayives, that's the bechora. What does it mean that he was mevazet? It means that when you don't take the responsibility for something, it's as if you are desecrating it. So idea number one came from Rabbi Alec Israel, that we cannot just live for today, but we have to live for tomorrow. Don't get stuck in short-term parking. A Jew lives in the long term. And even if that means you make sacrifices today, it's going to pay off in the future. Idea number two came from Moshe Feinstein, of Vayives as a Bechorah. We have to remember that with responsibility comes great privilege. I know it's the opposite, but I'm changing it around, right? With responsibility comes great privilege, and we should lean into that with great pride and great joy. And now we come to idea number 3. Could I have the chumash back, please? Okay. This idea blew my mind away. And I'm not just saying that. Like, literally, I got so excited. I actually danced in my office when I saw this idea. And you could ask Judy if she saw me, but I was dancing in my office. All right, here we go. You'll look at the videos? Okay, Yehuda will send you the video after the shiur. Okay. So we know that Yaakov goes, he steals the bracha. Esav comes in, realizes that he steals the bracha. What does he do? Vayitzak tzeakah gedolah. He screams. One of the most powerful moments in all of the Torah, really, where you just feel the visceral reaction to a storyline in the Torah. And then it's almost like Nebuch. It's almost like Nebuch. Esav comes to his father and he says, Habracha achat hi lecha, avi berchani gamani avi. Right? Did you only have one bracha in your toolbox? Can you maybe, do you have anything left for me? And it's just like a sad Nebuch. Like, Dad, I know you gave it to Yaakov. I know he stole it, but do you have any shirayim? Do you have anything left for me? So Vayan Yitzchak Aviv. So Yitzchak says back to him, Vayomer Elav. Listen to the bracha of Yitzchak. Hinei mishmanei aretz yeh moshavcha, that the fatness of the land, or the dew of the land, the cream of the land, is going to be you, yours. Umital ha-shamay me'al, and the dew of the land is going to be yours as well. V'al charbecha tichyeh, and by your sword you shall live. Asher of Rav, the Ksav Sofer. How is that a bracha? Everything is like a very weird bracha. So the first part I understand. You're going to have the cream of the land. You're going to have the dew of the heaven. Okay, so far so good. And you're going to live by the sword. Now, imagine going to Israel now and going up to a chayal that's been in the army for 300 plus days the last couple of years. And you say to him, I'm going to give you a bracha. My bracha is to you that you should always have to carry a gun everywhere you go. That you're going to live by the gun. What would the chayal say to you? They would say, shkoyach, give your bracha to someone else. That's not the, right? What would you give a bracha? My bracha is you should never need a gun anymore. My bracha is you should live in peace and harmony, that you should never need a sword or a gun. So ask the Ksav Sofer, I understand. If this is a bracha for Esav, what is the bracha of you should have a sword? It's a good question, right? Never thought of it. It's an unbelievable question. Says the Ksav Sofer something unbelievable. It's almost like you're not going to believe that the Ksav Sofer wrote this. That's how unbelievable it's going to be. I'm telling you, money back guaranteed. If you do not like this Ksav Sofer, I'll return, Dr. Elf, I'll return the money of your sponsorship. And anyone else who didn't sponsor, I'll return their money with a few extra zeros on it as well. He writes here the following. He writes here, well, you didn't sponsor anything, so I add zero to that. He says the following. I'm going to tell it to you outside, and then, but I can't even do it justice. Says the Ksav Sofer, if you live a life absent of any struggle, your life is meaningless. If you live a life absent of any struggle, your life is meaningless. What defines the purpose in our lives are the moments we have to struggle and fight for something. And it's true. He writes here, Mishi yeshlo komishalosav. Anyone who has everything they want. They have all the money. They have the house. They have the car. They have the vacations. Bli shum mania yom yom. And they never have to ask for anything or worry anything. They have they have everything, wealth you could ever imagine. Moes bechayav, they hate their lives. Now, how do we know this is true? The Ksav Sofer wrote this a long time ago. How do we know this is true, Chevra? We know this is true because if you look at celebrities nowadays, if you look at the richest people in the world, what do they all do? They're all on drugs, they're all drinking. Why? Because they have everything, but their lives are so empty. Their lives are so empty. And so they numb themselves with other things. If you have everything, mois bechayav, you hate your life. Listen to this. I had to read it twice. V'kvar hay maisip es manenu. He says it was an incident in my life. Mishayoved atzmo ladas. A person nebuch. A person committed suicide. V'iniach achara michtav. And he left a letter. Ki meirov ashro v'chol tavosa biyado. Because he was so wealthy. Hu mois bolam. He hated the world. There was no purpose to his life. He had everything you could ever imagine, but he was empty inside. Umayya sofan shel dvarim. So what's the point of it all, he says. I have the car, I have the house, I have the vacations, I have...
Yacht.
What?
The yacht, the The yacht.
The yacht, right? I have everything. But you know what he didn't have? He didn't have meaning. Right? Maya sofa shavarim. He didn't have meaning. So what did he do? Baharagatsmo, he killed himself. Literally, lo alinu. Amnam gama olanasam alimam. She had adam doi gumitstar v'chosim arviach. Yorev oled. But then you have another guy. A guy who worries. And a guy who goes up. And he has downs. He has some good days and he has some bad days. And some days he's successful. And other days he fails. Some days he doesn't get angry. And other days he does get angry. Some days he doesn't look. Some days he does look. Right? Vikona umocher. He's constantly in this battle, this tug of war in this world. Itim ra'av, itim tova. Some moments are really great. Some moments are horrible. Ve'in lo shalom u'menucha b'dayto. And he has no menuchas ha'nefesh. His whole life is a battle, an internal battle. Am I doing the right thing? Am I not doing the right time? This moment I won, this moment I lost. I have ups and I have downs. U'la olam ayef yalgeya. And sometimes he's tired. But you know what, says the Ksav's over? I couldn't make this up. Vizehu chiyuso. But that's what gives it purpose. It's the battle. It's the struggle that ultimately makes him feel alive. Al kein amar Yitzchak le'Esav. Now we understand Yitzchak's bracha to Esav. First, Yitzchak says you should have all the materialism in the world. You should have mishmanei aretz. You should have all the fat of the world. And you should have all the dew. But you know what you should also have? How does he end the bracha? V'achar becha tichya. But you should also have to battle. Einu cherev l'milchama mamish. He says, we're not talking about a battle like I'm going to go and have a sword fight, fencing. Ela kanal tamid lochim im atzmo v'zohi chiyutzo. He says, my bracha is that even though you have the wealth, and even though you have the car, and you have the vacations, and you have the yacht, and you have everything, but you should also have the struggle. Because v'zehu chiyutzo, it's in the struggle that you're going to find the meaning and the purpose to life. I mean, come on. Is that not amazing? Is that not like mind-bogglingly amazing? Do you not want to share this with so many people that you know who are struggling with purpose, who live lives of privilege, and yet they're so empty, and you want to go to them and say that the goal of life is not easy. The goal of life is meaning. I spoke about this in Parshas Bereishis, for those of you who are awake that day or here that day. I said at some point along the way, we seem to confuse easiness with meaning. And we try to make the world as easy as possible. We live, I don't care who you are at this table, we live in one of the most privileged generations in Jewish history. That is a fact, right? We have so much. And yet, if you talk to any teenager in our community, they'll tell you that they're struggling now more than probably a lot of other generations. Our teenagers are driving the BMWs, they're going on the vacations, they've got everything. And yet our teenagers look up, and I talk to them all the time, and they ask the same question that he says literally right here, Maya Sofan Shaldvarim. Like, what is this all about? There has to be something more than this. There has to be something that's going to fill me, that's going to give me that purpose, that's going to give me a sense of a mission more than just the car and the bank account and the job. There's an amazing book. I'm careful to quote it because he's a Jew, but he does something so terrible at the end of the book. He starts, whatever. But David Brooks wrote an amazing book called The Second Mountain. This is literally, the premise of the book, The Second Mountain, is that there are two mountains to everyone's life. Mountain number one is materialistic success. You spend your 20s, your 30s, and you're conquering. You're working till 1 in the morning. You're making money. You get the house. You get the car. You get the vacations. He goes, and then what happens is you crash. You come down that mountain because you hit a point where you realize, I got all of that. I fulfilled all of those dreams, and yet I feel so empty inside. And so you come down that mountain. And then he says you have to build yourself up a second mountain. Only this time that mountain's not about material success, but it's about meaning and purpose. It's about giving over to other people. It's about community. It's about commitment. And that's when you climb that second mountain, which ultimately is much taller and much grander and fills your life with purpose. Says the Ksav Sofer, now you understand the bracha that Yitzchak gave to Esav. Yitzchak says, first I'm going to bless you with all the materialism. You should have everything you want, but v'alchar becha tichyeh, you should also have to battle. You should also have to struggle. You should also have to fight. Because v'zohi chiyuso, that is what's going to give you your life meaning and purpose. I hope that didn't disappoint. Again, I'm happy to refund any money, but that is an unbelievable, mind-boggling, life-changing pshat of the Ksav Sofer. So we saw three ideas. One idea was from Rabbi Alex Israel. Don't get stuck in short-term parking. live a life of long-term parking. That is the whole story of Esav and Yaakov. Idea number two from Moshe Feinstein, that we don't run away from responsibility. We run towards it. And even if it's hard sometimes, but we're still going to run towards it. That was the bizayon, that Esav wanted the easy way out. Esav said, what do I need this headache for? No, sometimes we have to take the responsibility for what's around us. And idea number three, this unreal idea from the Ksav Sofer, that it is through the struggle, and it is through the battle, it's through the ups and the downs and the wins and the losses that ultimately give our lives meaning and purpose. And with that, I wish everyone a good Shabbos.